Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Good evening and welcome to Down at Third Man podcast. We're back. We've had, well, technically, I guess, 2 weeks of the North Staff season, but first one was cup week, so we've sort of half ignored that slash couldn't be arsed because it was sunny and we wanted to go to the pub last week. Big welcome to anyone new listening this season, but I would assume most people are going to be listening from last year. We're going to try to keep it a little bit briefer than last year, where we used to ramble on for hours talking about every league and every game going. Still sponsored, still supported by Woodstock Cricket, so if you're looking for some new kit, go and give them a look. And we're still supporting cardiac risk in the young. So if you want a bat sticker, I've still got a few left and I can order more. And if anyone's got any suggestions for any other merchandise they'd like to see, please let us know, because we have had the suggestion of caps, but I'm not going to go to the effort of getting caps sorted for what at the moment is two people. So if anyone's interested, please let us know. Right, I am joined today by Jono and Swifty. We'll go to Swifty, who looks like he's either just come from court or he's about to manage a very important football final. How are we, Mr. Swift?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you, mate. Yeah, just got in from work.
I got in a while ago, I can't lie. And Jonathan, how are we?
Delightful.
I mean, I can't see you, so I'm just going to assume that you've got out of your suit at this point. But in fact, you've been to the gym, haven't you? So you must be out of your suit.
I have.
Good lad. I like to see that you're trying to keep fit for the season. That's always a positive. Right, I guess I guess the main talking point really since the last time we podcasted was that there has been changes to England cricket. The first one, of course, has been that Rob Key was announced as the managing director, as the cricketing director, whatever you want to call it. Jono, what do you make of Rob Key, of all people? I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Rob Key, but I'm still struggling to work out, other than being an ex-player and someone who's commented for a few years on Sky, I'm actually struggling to see what qualification he has any different to anyone else.
I'll answer your question by posing another question.
Oh, bloody hell.
How's that? What qualifications were you expecting? Because the last time I checked, you don't go around gathering experience to be managing director of the ECB. And if you do, you are limiting yourself to quite a specific niche, shall we say. He is, in my opinion, just as qualified as Ashley Giles was, is. He is just as qualified as, say, the likes of Andrew Strauss, although Andrew Strauss has got like a prolonged England career plus captaincy on his side. So in terms of his success of his career, I suppose Strauss has got the leg up on everyone. But I think, so people seem to be hung up on this kind of like lack of experience or qualification, but I really don't see it as an issue, because what are people expecting? Do you know what I mean? Like, he's there to make decisions. He's not there to have a hand. He's not like a managing director of a company, I wouldn't thought. He's there to make cricket-based business decisions and cricket-based structured decisions. He's got a massively extensive county career. He's got a really in-depth knowledge of county cricket, probably more so, I think, than anyone else who was floated out as the candidate. He has coached at the county level, like Giles has and did. He has been a director and had his hands in at Kent for an awful long time. So his finger in terms of English cricket is on the pulse still very much. So actually, I'd say that he is perfectly well qualified. And the thing that I like about him most is I think he's pretty frank with his opinions. I don't think he's a yes man. And I think he wants England. I think the way he comes across publicly, he always comes across really well, because he wants England cricket to do well, as we all do. But Giles was a little bit too corporate for my liking, a little bit too stale. And I think Rob Key might just lay his heart on his sleeve just a little bit more. I'm not asking him for it to be ripping his shirt off in press conferences or anything like that. But I think Rob Key might lay it on the line a little bit more than, say, someone like Giles did. So I think it's really good. I like the appointment of me. I like it.
Yeah, no, I think that's almost the point. I don't think all these names that were bandied around, I don't think any of them have anything that particularly made them stand out as such, if that makes sense. Like, normally, with like a football manager's job, there's reasons to pick certain people over others, isn't there? Whereas I didn't think there really was. I think you're literally going off probably, well, I'd assume the people who made the decision were going off whose opinion they agreed more with. I guess it's a bit of an odd one. I've never thought about it before, about how on earth you decide who has that job. Si, what did you make of the appointment? Any thoughts to add on?
No, I think Johnny makes a really fair point. You think, you look around and you think, what makes you qualified for that role, and how can you really be more qualified than Key, where he's got an extensive experience of county cricket playing and coaching, his punditry work, he seems as in the know as anybody else. I think it's a decent appointment. I really do.
Good. So we'll go on to the next. Well, his first, what appears to be his first appointment himself. Expected tomorrow in a press conference that Ben Stokes will be named as the test captain, which I know a lot of pundits were sort of dead against, because they don't want to pile all the pressure on your best player, like I guess we've seen before with people like Flintoff, haven't we? And even KP, I guess, to be fair. So that's what's expected to be announced tomorrow. They also expect him to announce that both Anderson and Broad will be brought basically straight back into the fold. I'll let you start this time, Si. What do you make of that first major decision?
It's a difficult one, really, isn't it? Stokes and Root are probably the only two players that are guaranteed to be selected for every game. You've obviously got a couple of quality bowlers that, if they're fit, you'd like to select every game. But as bowlers, they need to rotate. They play a lot of cricket, especially those bowlers that are playing in the one-day, the white ball stuff as well. So you can only really see Root and Stokes being guaranteed a place in the side. And if you're taking the captaincy off Root, you've kind of got to give it to Stokes. I completely understand the whole, it's his workload, and whether he is a good captain, I don't know. Whether that'll affect his workload, having to bowl and having to bat high up the order, I don't know. Hopefully, I don't know. The way that Stokes' character is, I feel like he would bowl himself into the ground for England. So whether that would be a good long-term thing, probably not. But unless you're going to bring in a player to be almost like a specialist captain, and you're just going to back that player regardless of how poorly they do, like somebody like a Burns, for example, who's got quite a bit of captaincy experience from Surrey, then unfortunately, if you don't want Root to do the job, and I agree with that, I think his time has passed as the captain, then the only real option to go for there is Ben Stokes.
Yeah, Jono, I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on this, won't you, mate? Come on. As an ex-captain yourself.
Ex-captain, yeah, you're right. I think Swifty's hit the nail on the head, really, is the fact that you've got, you in that England team as it is now, and let's not beat around the bush here, it's an England team that's trying to compete whilst in transition. We don't know what our best side is. We've been trying to find our best side since probably... sometime in the mid, a few years ago, probably anywhere up to the last half a dozen years, really, trying to like muddle our way through our best team. And there's only two names on the team sheet that would appear week in, week out, and that is Joe Root and Ben Stokes. Joe Root, for all of his tremendous talent and as good as he is, and I think he leads the team with incredible dignity and all that kind of jazz. And he, again, is a very safe corporate option. Is a little bit, and I'm not, it's not to doubt his passion by any stretch, but he's just a little bit too beige for my liking as England captain. And I think that's, and I think he's had a crap team to deal with, but we've just been a bit toothless. I think we are toothless under his leadership, and I think he has got to be held to account to an extent about that. So logically, Swifty's right. The only other person that it can realistically go to is Ben Stokes, because he's the only other person that will play every game if fit. Now, me personally, I don't think it's a bad thing, because I think Stokes might bring a bit of a balance of the PC beige route of Root, but I think he might also bring a bit of his X Factor personality, his bit of his left right good night to captaincy. The X Factor that he brings when he's he's playing as well. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. The amount of times that I've sat here and said, or said to other people, like, I don't want to be Australian. I don't want us to be the Australian cricket team. But sometimes I wish we'd just have a bit more of the edge that the and the arrogance that those teams have about them, because that's what makes really, really good sides, in my opinion. They all have a bit of an edge that you love supporting, but you'd hate to play against. And we, like, over the last few years, if I was an opposition player under Joe Root's captaincy, I'd have loved to have played against England, because I'd have thought, soft. That's the first thing that had come to my mind, soft. And I think maybe under Ben Stokes' stewardship, and if he's got the backing of the other senior players, he's got the backing of Key, got the backing with selection, and he gets a bit of a team ethos going, I think we might have a bit of a harder-nosed kind of fight to us. But I like that. My personal opinion is I think it might be too much. So I think Swifty's onto something there as well. I think it might be too much. So I hope it isn't. I hope I'm wrong on that. I'm kind of hopeful that maybe the captaincy means that he becomes more responsible with his own body in terms of, like, his bowling and his workload and becoming an absolute animal in the field. And he kind of calms down a little bit from that respect. But I would have liked one of the more left-field options. I would have liked a Rory Burns, who I think is in our best 11, by the way. I would have liked Rory Burns to take the captaincy. I'd have liked us to... Because other than those two, unless you're picking Joe Root or Ben Stokes, you have literally, in my opinion, got to go with a fringe player who'd be a good captain, but you've got to accept that he is just a fringe player. So you've got to accept that his performances sometimes won't be that good. Or you've literally got to go back to the 80s and pick a specialist captain. Pluck someone out of county cricket who's the best captain going and play him just because he's really good at doing that. Someone, I don't know, like, I'm not trying to doubt his ability, don't get me wrong, but, like, if you look at someone like Tom Abel at Somerset, is rumoured to be a very, very, very good captain. I know he had a bit of a lean start to the season, but I know he got 100 last week. Like, I've got no idea where he'd play in an England tie. I don't even think he's good enough necessarily, but he's meant
to be. You've just upset a lot of Somerset fans.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that he's not good. I rate him. I think he's really good, but England top five?
Yeah,
I don't know. Certainly not on a consistent basis anyway. But yeah, I'd have liked to see a bit of a left field appointment. One thing that I do hope, though, is I hope that I personally hope that Stokes taking the captaincy, I would like to see him then maybe drop down to six, perhaps. That's one of the effects, because me personally, I think he plays his best cricket when he's at six. I think he's a bit too high at number five, is my gut feel at 5 and 4, that he's a bit too high. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Fair. I can't disagree with either of you. That's always annoying. I guess the only other thing really that's been announced around England was actually came out yesterday. So I guess technically it was a decision from Rob Key before possibly the captaincy, but it was announced that obviously both jobs, or should I say two separate jobs, have been advertised. A white ball, a limited overs coach, and then a red ball coach. Something I've thought was sort of an obvious thing to do for quite a while now. I'm surprised not more countries have done it, because it's just a massive, massive workload, isn't it? I'm surprised that not all countries have got separate captains and separate coaches. And I still think that
especially with the amount of cricket we play, because we play seem to play twice the amount of cricket that everyone else plays, seemingly.
Yeah, so I mean, I still believe that we might end up with more or less completely separate sides, other than maybe one or two players. But what do you make of that decision, Jono, to split the coaching up now, well, basically completely?
Yeah, that obvious decision. I think we've been on the road to it for a few years, haven't we? And this is kind of just like we are essentially making it official. Like, you think even under Bayliss, let's face it, Trevor Bayliss was brought in to make us better at white ball cricket. But realistically, towards the end anyway, Farbrace had far more of a say over that white ball side than necessarily Trevor Bayliss did towards the end. And quite often we'd find ourselves going on like separate tours of white ball and red ball with different coaching staff, different teams. I think it's an obvious but maybe necessary. I've read rightly that I've read some rumours in the press that they've already potentially behind the scenes approached the likes of Ponting and Mihaela Jayawardene for the Red Bull team, who have all said no. I've read that in the papers this week.
Interesting. I guess on that note, who would you be looking at, Johnny? Who would be your suggestions if you could have, I guess not necessarily anyone, because obviously we're saying that those names aren't available, but who would you go with?
I would like someone as a Justin Langer figure would be my choice for the Red Bull team. I would like someone like a Langer, because I think that the complaints that the Australian team maybe they've been rumoured to have, I think they're the kind of traits that we absolutely need. So I think it might be the wrong appointment at the right time, if you get what I mean.
Mm.
So not necessarily picking the right man for 3, 4, 5, 6 years time, but picking the right man for the next 18 months to 24 months. I'd have no issue with someone like Collingwood taking the white ball side, because I honestly think that our white ball side could quite literally run itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'd say Morgan more or less runs it, surely, at this point.
Yeah.
Sorry, John.
I think it's okay, I was done.
I thought you were.
I'm in agreement. I think England needs someone like a Langer kind of figure that is quite intense and is quite in your face, rather than a yes man that they'll let the players just walk all over them and will just continue to be selected. And I think that Collingwood or Morgan do the white ball, absolutely. I think it's probably, for me, time for Morgan to step down as a player. I think there are better players now that can play in both the 2020 and the one-day side. England have got an absolute abundance of white ball batsmen. They could probably put three sides out that would be competitive in international cricket, which is completely opposite to their Red Bull game, where they can't seem to get one side out that's competitive against West Indies. I think Collingwood and Morgan maybe doing it together, and then bring somebody else in as a batsman into that red white ball side.
Yeah, makes sense. Can't argue with that. Right then, I guess it's time to go on to the joys that is, well, where the centre of all cricket is, North Staffs, isn't it? As I said, we obviously had the cup competition the first week. I think it was quite a good idea starting with the cups, actually. I quite like that idea. However, I think some people may say that it was a little bit too early, but Jono, you played in it, so I guess you're the man to ask. How did you find it playing that first?
I quite liked playing the cup first week. I was cold, but but other than that, I quite enjoyed playing cup first week, because it felt like you were breaking into the season, which was quite nice. So not only did you feel like you were breaking into the season, but slightly less pressure necessarily less pressure than starting with a league match, just cracking in. So, I would not be adept to doing that again.
Yeah. To quickly run through the results, I'll just say the teams that went through. So it was Leek, Stone, Knipersley, Modishaw. I guess really Mod beating Longton was quite a shock, really, in the end. Endon beat Whitmore, which was a little bit of a shock as well. Checkley got through, Hemi beat Beers, which I think a couple of us might have predicted, to be honest. But I can't remember, so don't hold me to that. Alworth went through, Meekins beat the current holders, Cheadle. They went through quite comfortably as well, really, in the end. Bagnall obviously beat Big Yen. We won't talk about that, will we, Jono?
No.
Blythe beat Sandiford. Cavazal ones went through. Eccleshall 2s beat Inwood Lane was another shock. Newcastle and Artsill 1s went through. Eccleshall 1s went through. Road Park 1s beating Newcastle and Artsill 1s was another bit of a shock going on. Ashcombe Park 1s and Port Hill 1s all going through. Right, it was the first weekend of the cricket season. Now, before we go through the leagues, has anyone got any particular person they would like to mention? I've got two that I need to mention, just so that they'll be quiet, really. But I'll let you boys go first. Is anyone you picked up on across last weekend's fixtures that deserves a bit of a shout out? Si, I'll let you go first if you've got one, other than you're getting through for yourself.
We played at home against Kisgrove, who are great set of lads. They'll be up there and there or thereabouts. Highfield's quality batsman, way too good to be in Div 7. He batted pretty well. But there's a young lad that opens up the bowling for Kisgrove called James Greeley. He must only be about 17, 18. And I had the delights of umpiring, and he's there or thereabouts on a length. Every single ball.
Bounced me last year.
Decent pace. Yeah. Definitely picked up a yard from last year. I think he's one to watch in a few years' time. Yeah, definitely. He's played, batted about five or six as well, and he looked handy with a bat as well. So, yeah, James Green from Kisgrove, one for the future.
Fair. And, Jono, anyone that you noticed or picked up on or just heard about at all?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it in the village. Well, very, very close to the village. So I'd just like to shout out a player last weekend who made his debut in the Stone League for our fourth, and that was... George Clay, played last week and played this weekend. Top boy, his first game of senior cricket. I think he got 17 not out, batting towards the end.
Yes.
Was one of, if not the youngest player on the pitch. Looked perfectly accomplished with the bat, and then got his first senior wicket on the same day, which was really good to see, which his dad told me he was absolutely bricking it as well. So absolutely chuffed a bit, and he went even better than I thought he would in senior cricket. I mean, we had a look at him in the winter and thought, oh, he's got a bit taller, he's got a bit bigger, he'll do well on a Sunday here, and he absolutely did. So, yeah, I do. That's my shout-out there.
I guess that means, really, I've got three shout-outs because I didn't think of mentioning George, but, yes, George was class. So, big shout-out to George. Then I've got to mention two more. So, first of all, Mr. Ben Degg, who I have the pleasure of working with, nipping it around. I think he took a four for it the weekend, plus possibly something like a cheeky little six not out to get him over, cheetle twos over the line. He's been desperate for me to tell everyone about how well he'd been bowling in winter nets. So the fact that he's actually doing it on a Saturday means I guess I've got to mention it. So I hope he listens to this before work tomorrow. And then technically outside of the A, but Ollie Wilson, who I think we've all had the joys of coming across, who famously used to, if you used to ask him, if you ever hit a ton, and tell you about some friendly apparently played for Shifnal, that's magically not on play cricket. But he did actually hit a ton this weekend. And fair play to him, 111 not out of 40 balls is a fair whack. When your team were 47 for five and needed to knock off 190, that's a pretty fair effort from the lad, I'll give him that. And then he also, the next day, he then went and hit 56 off 27. So he had a decent weekend, and I'll give him a shout out just so he'll stop asking when the fucking podcast's going to be out on the group chat, because I'm fed up of hearing, because it's obvious he was after a shout out. He's still a buzzer though. I hope he knows that. Right then, Prem, big first weekend. Checkley beat Cheadle. Checkley coming away with, was it 18 points now? See, I don't even know how many points you get anymore. That's how useless I am.
I'm confused. I don't know what the
points were, guys.
I don't know what the points are. No idea.
Well, Checkley won, despite Cheadle batting, won the toss, batting first, 208 for 8 off their 45. Runs there for Coxon, Tom Degg, 44 for Ali Khan, no shot there. Matty Salas, 40. So I guess would have thought decent total. Tom Moulton there taking three for, but then Checkley went and knocked it off with two overs to spare, and we're only two down. 35 for Andy Carr opening, but it was all about James Kettlebrew with 97 off 82, not out, and James Crony with 51. So they ended up winning, really. I know it was only two overs to spare, but being only two down, that's a fair win, isn't it, you would say. Meekins to victory against Bagnall. What did you make of Bagnall, Jono? Obviously, you played against them in the first week.
I think they're a strong team. They don't really have any significant weaknesses in any of their any of their playing 11. So when they get beat, I think whoever beats them will have deserved it.
Yeah, from what I saw of them, I would have to agree. Bagnall only posted posted 1-3, 1-6 from their 45 overs. There was 27 from Josh Cartledge and 31 from Morgan Murray-Williams, but that was about it, really, to be honest. Two wickets each for Carlisle and Shazad Leacat, whoever that is, I don't know. Meekins knocked it off with over 10 overs to spare, 28 from Carlisle. And actually, Zafar Iqbal and Paul Boone were the ones who got him over the line after having a bit of a struggle. They were seven down. Got to mention that Justin Mould-Wermo has stepped down as first-team captain. Jono, Si, what do you make of that? Literally, well, one game into the league season, stepped down as skipper. Jono, I'll let you go first because obviously you will have spoke to him, I assume.
On
that day.
Put it this way. Wouldn't have expected it from the week before. So unless you can tell me otherwise, as to you know the reasoning, I a little bit weird timing, really. But
I believe he said it's because he's got obviously too much to do at home and stuff, and can't dedicate obviously the time he wants to it, etc. But yes, I had imagined. I mean, I have known captains to step down within the first few weeks. What would you say if that was your skipper?
Oh, our skippers have retired from cricket after defeat. So just stepping down as captain and agreeing to play the week after is absolutely nothing. But yeah, you can only imagine it's work related and it's not performance related. From what I've read, he's taken them up from Div 3 all the way up to the Premier League. He's won in the Cup the week before and he's lost a tight one against Meekin. So it can't be a performance related resignation. It has got to be some kind of work commitments, home life commitments, and fair play to him.
Yeah. So the next game was Leek versus Alworth. Quite a good game, actually, in the end. Alworth won the toss and chose to field. Leek posted 158 for 5, mainly thanks to Alex Mallers, 84. Three wickets there for Ben Holt, who continues to get wickets even though he's moved up a division. Alworth did it with what appears to be one ball to spare, 1-6, 1-6. Alex Banks's 74 top was important. Bay Swanepoel, the pro, got 27. Ed Parrish, 21. And then two sort of tail enders saw him over the line just in time. In fact, I believe the person with the winning runs hit literally a four to win the game. Next last ball of the innings with his first ball, so fair play to him. Takes from doing. Sam Slater there, though, taking 3 foot for Leek. Longton won quite, well, very comfortably, I guess you could say, in the end against Bearsland, because he won by 65 runs. But I believe it was a little bit squeaky bum time because Longton were 177 all out. Runs coming there for Ross Coates with 42 and Alex Coates with 34. Five for there for Michael Brown, who I know we've mentioned before, haven't we, on the pod, probably should have had more opportunities, sort of, should we say, for staffs and stuff, wanted, Jono?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, mate. And Bearsland actually weren't doing too badly. Bilal Abbas got 56, Zem Malik 27, and they were actually looking pretty good. I mean, when they were 81 for 1, they probably fancied the chances. However, Ed Jones, the skipper, has had an absolute day out and took 6 for 20. Rich Williams also took 3 for 9. And yeah, Bearsland collapsed with literally no scores over double figures and 3 ducks. Absolutely went just collapsed. I don't think there's any other word for it. 112 all out. Hemeath won by 13 runs against Modishaw. Another close game there. One sec, I'll wait for it to load. Liam Banks only getting 22. Some runs down the order for a couple of people getting into double figures, but Hemeath only managing 105 all out. I guess Modishaw, having won the toss and left field, would have been very, very happy. However, only 3 people got double figures for them. They were all out for a measly, I guess you could say, 92. 3 wickets each for Ben Lucas and Tom Hodgson, and 2 each for Liam Banks and Tom East. Put the end to that. And then Port Hill won yet again by scoring over 200 runs. 92 for Matt Coxon, 78 not out for Tom Longworth. Posted 227 for 4. and Stone could only manage 175 for 9 in reply, despite 40 for Jacob Degg. Two wickets apiece for Ben Cotton. Apukuji Pereira, I don't know if that's how you say it, sorry again if it's wrong, Dan Gibbs and Craig Barker. Right, does anyone else want to do the Div 1, bearing in mind we've got 8 minutes of the podcast left, so you can rattle through? Or am I going to have to? Go on.
If I can do Division 1, and then I can do my specialism Division 2 and 3 and 4 and 10.
Yeah, do Div 2, 3 and we'll be done. Let's go.
Perfect. Yeah, some close games in Div 1. Audley posted 191 for 9 off their 45 overs and beat Ashcombe Park by just the one solitary run. Runs for Jack Redmond, 44. Runs for Riaz, 42. Hemmings got 26. Will Rhodes, 33. So runs shared about a bit there. And then Ashcombe Park coming up just short, despite 63 from Raza and 39 for Sadiq. So they're just one run short. In the next game, Whitmore won by 7 runs against Blythe. Whitmore batted first, got bowled out, looks to be in on the last ball for 164. Blythe just coming up a bit short on 157 for 9. Runs for Whitmore slightly down the order with Zaid scoring 68 from number 6 and Matthew McCall with 33 for number 10. Pretty impressive. Blythe, few 30s. 34, a 37, and a 31, but yeah, just falling just short in the end. Sandbach, on their debut into Division 1, started off with a win against Endon. Really good result away at Endon, chasing down 196. They did it with, 2.5 overs to spare, just 3 wickets down. Runs for Gareth Lennon, 88 from Dane Tilsley, good young player, and Jack Stephen knocking the winning runs off there, was scoring 12 out of 8 balls. Newcastle and Harts Hill beat Norton. Norton obviously winning Division 2 by a canter last year. Many people thinking that maybe they could be at the top end this season, but yeah, falling short, bowled out for just 129 in 38.2 overs. 81 from Jack Furnival, but not a lot from anybody else. 12 for Pringle, 12 for Long. Newcastle and Harts Hill, Asif Raza, 56 now, and Andy Whitehead, 5 now at the end, seeing them home with lots and lots of overs to spare. Eccleshaw absolutely hammered Sandyford. Eccleshaw batted first, 285 for 4 off their 45 overs. Runs for, when it loads, 140 off 91 balls from Scott Winnington. That is pretty impressive effort. And then Sandyford, bowled out for 63, so 222 run victory for Eccleshaw. So that is an absolute dicking. And then finally, another close one. Nipersley chasing down 200 at Wood Lane. Wood Lane bowled out for 200 with a couple of overs to spare. Nipersley getting home by 7 wickets with an over and a half to spare. 50 for Omar Ali for Wood Lane. 71 for Jake Thompson.
God, 17 Tomo.
For Dan Brearley. And then Nipersley, run shared about 55 for Louis Washington, 34 for James Abbott, we saw him the week before playing in that staffs game, 33 for Jonathan Cumberbatch, and 17 out for Joe Dutton. So that's your Division 1 roundup.
And that was quick fire. I like it. No pressure, John. You've got 5 minutes. Let's see how you get through Div 2 and Div 3.
No problem. So we'll kick off with All Sager. Lots of good games in Division 2, by the way. I'll say that first. So the first one is Caverswall against All Sager. Caverswall sneaked home by 6 runs. Caverswall 209 for 8 off their overs, and All Sager pulled up short at 203 for 9. Caverswall's overseas pro with 93 off 70, and a couple of other people chipping in. Sean Price with 57, Akil Ahmed for 34 for... All Sager in reply. Craig Grimley with 446 off 6. A little bit expensive, but there you go. So Caverswall get off the board at the start. The boys.
Go on, the boys.
Tight one. We had a great game on Saturday with Barlaston. Big Malens, 211 for 5 off their overs, indebted to George Harding with 91. Young Sammy Zaruf with 57. A couple of other people chipped in with teens and 20s. All right. So great start from being none for one off 0.1. So very
good
with
from
that.
You, Briggsy.
Yeah, very good, Steve. But with a team where Tom Taylor just rocked up bowled all his overs and came in at back to the three. It was a good result, and Ballast had ended up 10 short. It was in the balance at a couple of points. Tom Taylor hit a couple of clean balls, and Jack Davis did the same too. So Joey Sharp ended up top scoring with 43, but he couldn't quite get him over the line. So the boys ended up sneaking home with 10 runs to spare. Another game with 10 runs to spare was Leeside Stone. Leeside made the way to 160 all out. Oliver Shirley with 45, and a couple of other people chipping in with teens and 20s. And Stone left Rich Harvey high and dry on 68, not out, batting at three. And they ended up 150 all out. So a 10-run win for Leeside. Then we go to Little Stoke, winners by 15 runs this time in a slightly lower scoring game. Little Stoke made the way to 138 all out off 39. Reece Owens with 38 for them. Oakmore could only muster 123. Only Tom Sherritt and Gary Wright going past 30 for them. Port Hill, 15-run winners again. So lots of, as we can see, every single result was inside 20 runs apart from one. All games were won by the team batting first as well in Division 2, I might add. Simon Wood for 81 for Port Hill. Dan Hancock in his first game as skipper as a seconds with 61 and Killer with 37. And Silverdale pulled up 15 short despite 74 from Alex McChristie. And then in the final game of the day in Division 2 was the only comfortable victory, really. Mod Schnalton seconds racked up 205 for 7 at Stafford. And Stafford responded with 101 all out. Joe Hawkins with 72 from Modishaw. And that is your Division 2 roundup. Very quickly into Division 3 without going on to the scores. Checkley seconds, decent winners against Meary, first team. Eccleshaw, pretty comfortable winners against Meakin, second team. Alworth seconds and Newcastle and Hartsdale seconds played out a big scoring encounter in the two promoted teams from last year. Newcastle and Hartsdale racked up 236 for 6 off their overs, which included 71 for Ethan Gator, 43 for Rob Hagan, and 35 for Joe Wilson. It did also include nearly 30 extras. And Alworth pulled up just 13 short on 223. Matt Yardley made 88 and Connor Flowers 68. Hanford bowled out for 79, but made it interesting against Cheadle, who knocked them off for 7. Roeport first team comfortable winners by 70 against Hemi seconds. And the boys at Wedge, squeaky bum time, just got over the line, chased down Longton's 126 for 8, knocked it down 9 down in the end.
Big Paul Mason got them over the line 2 days in a row for Wedgwood, both times 9 down. Big shout out to him for that. I forgot about that. So, yeah, that means, Jono, you've just smashed through it. Well done. Superb.
Thank you.
We will try and make next week's podcast a little bit longer. However, my laptop was shit and would only let me on Zoom and not Skype, where we have unlimited call time. So I can only apologise. But a big thank you to both of you for joining us.
Cheers, mate. Enjoyed it.
A pleasure, always.
As always. And we'll be back next week with hopefully a longer podcast where we actually get to look a little bit more in depth and maybe even make the dreaded predictions of what's to come the week after. But we hope everyone at home goes well and has a lovely weekend and scores hopefully quite a few runs, takes quite a few wickets, as long as they're not against Big Lend or Audlem, of course, Mr. Swift.
Thank you very much.
But a thank you to everyone who has listened.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.